What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, welcome to a new episode of Fightful Movie Club. My name is Rob Wilkins, along with Gisberto Guzzo, and we have a special guest for our number two episode. It is none other than TNA's Josh Alexander, here to review The Town. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm happy to be here. I'm a big movie guy, so when you guys asked me, I hopped at the chance.
Well, we are very grateful for this. I just rewatched it this morning because usually I try to watch this a few days in advance, but this morning it just worked with my schedule, and I am very excited to talk about this movie. But Gisberto, I'll let you kick it off here.
Yeah, I mean, during our messages back and forth, I was so happy when you picked The Town, because I've watched this movie more times than I'm care to admit. It's so good. It's one of my favorite movies. So yeah, you just said you're a big movie guy. So I guess just kind of starting when you were younger, what was kind of your genre, or what movies were sort of playing all the time at your house?
I don't have a genre. I grew up an only child, so you know, went back and forth from my mom and my dad's all the time. So on weekends, I would get movies at my dad's that I otherwise wouldn't get as a young child at my mom's house, because there's a little bit more freedom there. So like, I grew up watching, like, I remember Universal Soldier, Bloodsport, like all these action movies my dad had. Like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. He was a big Western guy and stuff like that. So I grew up on weekends watching that with him. And then I come home to my mom's, which was a little bit more structured and a little bit more oversight and stuff like that. And, you know, I'd watch like the Disney films and all these other things there. But as I grew up, my mom's movie collection was actually pretty vast too. There used to be a thing, I can't remember what it was called, but you'd order VHS tapes, not old that I grew up with VHS tapes, because some people that watch this might not even know what they are anymore, but she would order them off the mail, and like you would get like 10 free movies or something as long as you cancel the subscription. I can't remember what it was called,
but Columbia House.
That's exactly what it was. It was CDs and movies, but my mom had like 300 VHSs, and then like by the time I was like 11 or 12, I was staying home for the summer by myself, and that's when I dipped into like Casino and all these other movies. And like Scorsese was my first like director that I was like, I need to see everything this guy's made. So, you know, I went through Raging Bull and Goodfellas and all these other things as like a 12-year-old kid. But yeah, like now it's any genre. With my wife, we're big rom-com fans. We enjoy those. I'll dip into like drama and stuff like that. I'm a huge sci-fi guy. I grew up watching Star Wars on repeat and stuff like that. But like we said, when we were trading emails back and forth, I think I sent you like five or six movies, and I just sent the five or six movies that I have on my phone all the time downloaded that I can watch at will when I'm on a flight or when I'm traveling. I've seen The Town 20, 25 times probably, like, you know what I mean? So there's tons of films that are in my wheelhouse and stuff like that, but this one's probably more than any other.
Awesome. Well, I when you started saying Scorsese, my favorite Scorsese film is The Departed. I absolutely just love that film. I can watch it pretty much any time. So I get it when it comes to Martin Scorsese. So what is it about the town that like made you just fall in love with this movie? Was it just the story? Was it just the acting, or was it all of the above?
Oh, well, like the acting, I think the acting's great and stuff like that. But like, I have this weird fascination with Boston culture. I find the Boston accent to be my favorite accent to be around in all my travels and stuff like that. The Boston accent's always been one that I've gravitated to. Like you mentioned The Departed, Mark Wahlberg in The Departed and stuff like that. That's something that gets me every time. Alec Baldwin as well. But like, yeah, the town, man, I've been a huge fan of Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, all those guys since, you know, Good Will Hunting. And then this came out and this was kind of a movie that I didn't know anything about. It was just like, it was out on a Friday. I was off at home and I asked the wife, I was like, you want to go to the movies? And we went. It was something that caught me off guard and blew me away. And for somebody that, you know, I was like 10 years old when Heat came out. This is kind of the heat of my generation, I think, now that I've gone back and watched that and heard and seen so much about that film. And this movie obviously picks a lot from Heat, but I'm sure we'll talk about that later. But
yeah. Yeah. I mean, Heat is actually my favorite movie of all time. So, I mean, the town does borrow a lot from Heat, and that's perfectly fine by me. Heat's one of those movies where I feel like they could remake it every 10 years and I wouldn't mind, just because the elements of it are so good and you can kind of retool it for new generations all the time.
Yeah.
But as far as Boston culture, I think this is kind of one of the all-time like great Boston movies, because I know you're on the East Coast. I don't know if you've spent much time in Boston. I had about a year stint there in 2013 or 14. And I think more than any other movie, this town kind of captures the spirit of Boston, specifically that area of Boston, even like just kind of how they shoot like the North End during that car chase, the overhead shots of Charleston, the like the real locations that they shot at, the real people from the town that they used as extras just to kind of create that authenticity. And I don't know about you, but when you watch the movie, you get a real feel of the town.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that Ben Affleck specifically does really well. Like Gone Dawn, you got that same feeling. Good Will Hunting, obviously, same feeling. And then you watch other films that are staged in Boston and stuff like that. Like the name's slipping my mind right now, Johnny Depp, the Whitey Bulger film.
Black Mass.
Black Mass. It didn't feel as Boston as something like this, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, this one captures everything I think that, you know, is good and bad about Boston at the same time.
Yeah, and Black Mass too. You had Joel Edgerton doing just the worst Boston accent you've ever heard. Like, he sounded drunk half the movie. Whereas, like, in this movie, like, aside from John Hamm kind of making fun of them with his, like, oh, it's not a couple guys knocking off Star Market, you know, that whole thing. And I know some people kind of got on, like, Blake Lively for her accent, but she was supposed to be kind of like high and drunk all at once. So it's kind of this thing where you can kind of forgive it.
Yeah, I strongly disagree with all the Blake Lively heat. I think Blake Lively's the best in this film. Like she's like the sixth man of the year award or whatever you want to say, like that off-cast person that isn't in many scenes that just kills it all the time. So
I think maybe there's some hate for the fact that this was kind of filmed in the middle of the height of Gossip Girl. I think maybe there was just like a little bit of hate for that. Like people not wanting to be like, oh, this person from Gossip Girl was really good in it. Yeah. For some reason, just too kind of fragile to admit that.
Yeah, it's quite possible. But I think like that's just showing her range and stuff like that. It doesn't pigeonhole her into that one role for the rest of her life, right?
No.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're right on the head there. A couple of facts about the town. It was released on September 17th, 2010. It made $154 million in the box office with a $37 million budget. So, you know, Warner Brothers was happy with that. The town was chosen as one of the top 10 films by the National Board of Reviews. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 92% by the critics, 85% by the audience. Jeremy Renner was nominated for Best Supporting Actor in 2011, but he lost out to Christian Bale, who was Dickie Eklund from The Fighter, which was another Boston movie. So, but yeah, there we go.
And the interesting thing about The Fighter, Mark Wahlberg in that one, he was actually Ben Affleck's first choice to play Jem. And then when he wasn't available to do it, I think it was his brother Casey had worked with Jeremy Renner on the assassination of
Coward Robert Ford.
Yeah, yeah. The assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. Yeah, he's Casey Affleck and Jeremy Renner worked together on that. And Casey Affleck recommended Renner. And honestly, I don't know about you, but he kind of steals the movie, doesn't he? Like, you'd seen him a little bit before in these like supporting roles, but starting in 2008, he's like The Hurt Locker, The Town, and then he goes on and he does stuff like Wind River, Avengers, American Hustle. He's had an amazing career. I don't know, are you much of a fan of Jenner's work?
I'm a huge Jeremy Renner guy. Like, I love Mark Wahlberg and The Departed and stuff like that, and I could totally see him playing this role, but I don't want to see anybody else but Jeremy Renner playing Jem. Like, Jem's the MVP of this film, obviously, like, nominated appropriately and stuff like that. I'm a huge Jeremy Renner guy. You mentioned Wind River. That's a film, like, people ask me, like, for, like, hidden gems all the time. Wind River's, like, right near the top for things that I suggest people to watch because, like, not many people have seen it, but I'm a huge Taylor Sheridan guy, obviously, as well. And that film just knocks it out of the park. And then, like, more Taylor Sheridan. Like, I think some of Jeremy Renner's best work's been The Mayor of Kingstown.
Yeah.
So...
awesome. That's, you hit it right on that. Like, I mean, Taylor Sheridan, I love his work too. So that's awesome. So we know you like, oh, go ahead.
No. Sorry. Too off.
Gotcha. We know you, like, you talked about the Boston, like why you like this movie so much. And what are your thoughts on like Ben Affleck as a director? Like, did you see like his other movie, like Argo, or some of like his other films that he's done?
Yeah. He did Gone Baby Gone as well, right?
Yeah.
Yep. He did. Yeah. It was Gone Baby Gone. And then he did The Town and Argo, and then starred in Gone Girl. And then he had a bit of a dip with Live by Night. But then I don't know, this past year he had Air, which I thought was great again. So he's showing himself to really be one of the kind of best directors working in Hollywood. And I still hate that they never let him do his own Batman film, because I think that would have absolutely killed.
Yeah, no. And like Ben, like prior to 2010, when this film came out, right before like Gone Baby Gone, just kind of dipping out. You know what I mean? Like, he had done Geely and all these other films. He kind of fell out of promise as being an A-list guy that everyone was saying was like, you know, the next whoever. But he's definitely found his spot being like an actor and director and stuff like that. So like, I'm a huge Ben Affleck fan, as I said. I can't say anything bad about him.
Yeah. And just to kind of come back onto heist films, I know we talked about Heat. We talked about The Town, and we'll get into more like specifics of like our favorite scenes from this movie. But are there any other heist films that you enjoy watching? Like, I know you mentioned Heat on the emails we were exchanging. You'd mentioned Den of Thieves. So what is it about like heist films that works for you? And is there any that you enjoy watching aside from The Town?
Den of Thieves is right up there. Like, I heard they're making another one. I just can't wait for it to come out now. I'm counting the days till whenever that's announced. But I think it's heist films. I think the anti-hero thing is the biggest thing. Like, you find yourself rooting more for these guys that are robbing banks and trucks and like taking hostages and maybe killing people along the way than you do for like John Hamm being the police officer. Like, he's kind of staged as being the heel in the scenario the entire time. And he plays it. But like, it's just like, we're in the whole age of the anti-hero for the past 20, 30 years. And heist films, I think they encapsulated the best. Like most films for me, like, and this goes for, like superhero films and everything else, I think they're always good as the bad guy in the film. Like, if there is a really good, like the Joker, that's the Dark Knight made it so special. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden Dark Knight Rises, you're just like, I like Dark Knight Rises. Like, I'm not gonna, the reason it fell off was because Bane wasn't as good of a villain as Joker. I think as good as the villain in the film. And the thing with heist films is you're rooting for the De Niro Heat,
yeah,
or the Ben Affleck and Jem, you know, scenario here in The Town and stuff like that more than anything. So it kind of flips it on its axis and it makes it a much easier digestible film, I think, at least to enjoy.
So you mentioned Den of Thieves and you were talking about how you're excited for the movie. Well, noted wrestling fan O'Shea Jackson actually tweeted this out on February 1st.
Yeah.
He says, so y'all can stop wondering, it's done. So they did finish filming. So I guess it probably takes close to a year for them to get everything done. So I bet probably right around a year we'll be good to go. And I cannot wait for that movie as well, because Gerard Butler is one of my guys, and I'm pumped for that movie as well. So I just wanted to make sure you saw that. So it's all wrapped. So get this story going.
Yeah, I saw the tweet. I've been counting the days since as well. Like that's the thing. I follow Shay, and like just ever since that and Mr. Compton, like he popped up on my radar. I was like, this guy, and then he's a huge wrestling fan, so I enjoy watching him interact with the IWC online every once in a while. But yeah, Den of Thieves, man, that thing, another film that just completely caught me off guard.
So yeah, perfect.
Oh yeah, no, I was just gonna ask, now that we've kind of talked about the bank heist. If you're in the base, say you're in the next Den of Thieves, you're in the town, you're in the heist film. What's your role? I wrote down some of the you could possibly have. So we got the getaway driver, we got the enforcer, we got the leader, the person who gets the money, or are you the customer on the ground who decides that they want to be the hero?
I mean, for the sake of me enjoying heist films, I'm gonna go with leader on this one. You know, because the leader, oftentimes, like the Ben Affleck character and stuff like that, they still have a moral compass. They're not the gist situation where they're just gonna take hostages and start killing people for no reason, just because. I'm gonna have to go with leader.
But you, Rob?
Well, my heart says the leader, but I know, like, when it comes down to it, I'm probably gonna be the guy that's the one that causes all the problems. So I'm the first one they take out. So I just know how that will go. And I'm the guy you can't tell. Like, I'd be the first one they say, yeah, he's gonna just ruin everything, so let's just take him out first. I just already know that. So it's probably best that I want to be there, but it's not going to work.
Yeah. Anyone that you work with or have worked with that you're bringing along on the heist with you? You can want to.
No. I would bring Ackland along for sure. He's one of my better friends in the wrestling business. And, you know, as a former, I believe, Marine, I don't want to screw that up. You know what I mean? He knows his way around everything, and he's very composed under pressure. So he'd be my first friend for any help.
Very good.
All right, yeah. Let's get into the mood itself. So I guess we'll start here. Do you have a specific like a favorite scene from the movie, and then we can kind of take it from the beginning? But do you have one that stands out above the rest?
You know, I've seen this movie 20 times. I rewatched it the other day. I have like the full director's cut on Apple Movies, which I purchased it like last year and watched it. I was like, this movie's different than any town I've seen before. It's tough to pick a favorite scene, man. I really enjoy, I think it's the North End truck heist.
Yeah.
I enjoy the getaway scene, the one that ends with them parking on the street and having the cop, you know, just kind of look the other way as they get away. If I'm flipping through channels and, you know, I find TBS and this is playing or something like that, and that's playing, I'm just hooked until the finish of the movie from that point on. So,
yeah. And it's actually great. Affleck said he was interviewing inmates about jobs that they had pulled, and that was an actual story that someone told him, that they had just finished a job and there was a cop across the street, and he just looked over, he's like, oh, fuck this.
I mean, smart play by the cop, man. You got six guys with like machine guns and stuff like that, so I mean, it's a thing for survival at that point. So the fact that it happened in real life just makes it even better.
Yeah, that's also my favorite scene, just for kind of how they captured the North End. That place is like an absolute maze. It's just one ways, and you also got the great quotes of like, close the fucking bridge, and then at the end, now that's some great driving. Like, just an absolutely fantastic scene. Rob, I don't know about you. Do you have a favorite scene from the movie?
Mine is kind of just like, it's when Affleck walks in Jeremy Renner's place and he says, look, I need you to do something. I got to go beat some people up. You can't ask me later. And Renner, like, he already knows the answer, but he just kind of like hesitates, and he just kind of looks at the TV and he's like, well, whose car are we going to take? And that's what I was just like, oh, that was just fantastic. I mean, it was just perfect. I don't think you could have done that scene any better, because that's his character. That's the way he is in the film. And he was just excited because he got to beat somebody up. if you told him he doesn't get to beat somebody up, does he go? Because he might not.
I love that scene when he shoots the guy in the kneecap. Oh, there goes college soccer. Oh, man. So, yeah. So the movie starts with the opening heist. I love like the whole kind of the pre-robbery meeting, seeing them sort of planning it all out. I laugh at that we're so kind of removed from 2009, him asking everyone to slide their BlackBerries over.
Yeah.
That's kind of like moment. Yeah. And they really set up Doug as kind of like, this is the guy who might be redeemable, the way he's kind of like trying to calm Claire down. And I guess that's like one of my nitpicks of the movie is like at the end, they do the whole, the heat ending where she goes, you know, come over. It'll be just like one of my sunny days, where it's just like when Kilmer gets waved off at the end of Heat. Is Claire actually forgiving this guy? I mean, he just got out like in a huge shootout in the middle of like Lansdowne in Boston. Like there's probably like a national manhunt for this guy. He robbed her bank, put her through all this like emotional trauma. And it's like, well, he didn't kill anyone, so I guess I'm okay with it.
There could be an element of like Stockholm syndrome there, you know what I mean? Where like eventually like she comes to love him for his faults and everything else towards the end. But like, I've seen this so many times. I think Ben Affleck is the one in the mask that sees her hit the alarm button with her foot. You know what I mean? Yeah. And he never says anything, never does anything. So I think that's like a little like crumb in the story there that you might go unnoticed otherwise, that, you know, she can hit back to in her mind to be like, oh, that guy saw me do that. You know, he didn't do anything. He could have just like, you know, and by then she knows like Jem would have just shot me on the spot. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So you know, there's all these little crumbs throughout the film that I think like lead to being like Ben being the redeeming character and her actually being able to fall in love with him, I think. So at least to suspend my disbelief to enjoy the film. So
what'd you guys think of Rebecca Hall's kind of job portraying Claire? Like, I know she kind of probably is best known for Iron Man 3 at this point, but I think The Town's among the best work she's ever done.
There's only one scene where, like, she, like, and I'm not saying it's not, like, great or anything like that. Just the way she, her verbiage and the way she delivers it, I kind of cringe a little bit when she was just, like, he comes to her in the closet later in the film when, you know, she finds out everything from John Hamm. And I did some reading on this film. And I hear there's a bunch of stuff. Like, it was a 4-hour cut originally, and there's this whole backstory of John Hamm being in love with her and yes, trying to date her and her turning him down. So, like, that makes this make way more sense when you see the scenes for how, like, invested he is in Claire as well. But, like, you know, he shows her, you know, that Ben's, like, suspect number one or whatever it is. She's in the closet crying. He comes over to see what's wrong. And she was just like, is this what you do? You have to fuck them, too, and all this stuff. And I'm just like, oh, God, like, Jesus, you know what I mean? Like, just and like, there's probably a lot of stuff left in the cutting room floor that makes that less cringe, but for me that was like the only scene where I'm just like, oh, you know what I mean? But like, as for like, you know, being the toonie girl that's in Charleston, yeah, and stuff like that, I think she hits it perfectly. So
yeah, you're spot on. Yeah, Affleck did have a 4-hour cut of the movie. He kind of wanted this to be his sort of like, but yeah, it got cut, and the director's cut, like the version that you were referencing earlier, I think there's something like 16 additional scenes in it where they show, yeah, Hamm tries to kind of hit on Claire, and he also tries to hit on Chris later on, and it gives his character a bit more depth. That it also gives a little more context to Doug's drug problem, where they show him and Renner kind of going to buy some drugs so they can find out where the guy lives to go beat him up. So yeah, it's a bit of an interesting movie, but I think the way they kind of cut it worked well.
Oh, it works great to get it down to like just over 2 hours and stuff like that. But like, I want to put it out there in the universe. I want the 4-hour cut. I want to see this whole thing.
Yeah, me too. For the next scenes that I have for one of my favorite, I mean, there's a few too many Claire and Doug dating scenes, like them just out at like lunch or at a diner or a Dunkin'. But I love Affleck doing the whole, I like to have a good cry at the nail salon, you know, just open up right up to the ladies. Or then when they're at Dunkin' Donuts and he's talking about how he loves watching CSI and Bones. I thought that was really great. Yeah. And then I think Rebecca really great in those scenes. And then I think the scene when they hunch, Jem crashes their lunch, the tension in that scene is incredible. And then him, when they say goodbye and he puts his hand on the back of his neck so she doesn't see the tattoo, that's just It's all perfect.
That's something that, like, in talking to other people about this film, because, like, I've obviously talked to people about it, they don't even notice that he covers the tattoo, or they're, why would he do that? I'm just like, because she says earlier in the film, she's like, I saw the Fighting Irish tattoo in the back of the neck, but I didn't tell the cops and stuff like that. You know what I mean? It's just perfect.
Yeah.
There was a scene too, like when she was telling him about the tattoo, she wasn't looking at him. Like, she kind of just was like having a normal conversation where she was looking at something else when she said it. But if you look at him when she said, you see like his eyes just get bigger. And I thought that was really good because it was just a psychological thing from like our standpoint to see. I don't think it was really meant for any, I guess, like, so if you didn't catch it, you just didn't catch it. But I really liked that because it was, because that's what you're thinking, because you're watching it. You're like, well, crap, you know, I would be the same way if that happened. And the fact that she didn't see those eyes just widen, that could have been a sign for her. And that I thought was really good, how he kind of asking questions. And then he started making it sound like he was trying to, I thought he was kind of giving her hints. And then he turned it around and said, well, then they're not going to, he basically said, well, if you do this, they're not going to go, the FBI won't have anything. They're not going to put you in witness protection, stuff like that. So like, if you go to, if it's stuff like it, he was given pros and cons, and I thought that was really good.
Yeah, he started with all the pros, and then he hit her with all the cons to like dissuade her out of it, right?
Yeah,
but, yeah.
Next scene I got was the FBI in the office, sort of starting to build their case against these guys. The scene when Ham and Dino go and crash the other guy's house, and he's trying to get information on the crew, and they got the great line of Jesus, Henry, oxy and guns, it's like towny Christmas. That's great. And Dino kind of laying out who everyone is for the rest of the crew. He's like, you need a Venn diagram for these fucking people, like how they all kind of connect with each other. I kind of wish we saw a little bit more of the FBI sort of building their case, because I do love movies where you like see the chase, the hunt, and them like kind of building the case. Again, probably the biggest nitpick with this movie for me is just how insanely bad every law enforcement person is at their jobs. Like, you got like Affleck walking around and like no one recognizes this guy. There's just a shootout in the middle of the street. They have to have this guy's picture, and he's just walking around in like a bus transit uniform, like, oh, just stay off this side of the street. Or like the law enforcement, they're all really bad at their jobs. Like they really should have messed up a lot quicker.
Yeah, I do have a few nitpicks. That would be one of them. The other one I'm mentioning is that, you know, this guy was drafted to the NHL. Like, he's got to be like a Charlestown celebrity just for that. And everybody's going to know his story that he washed out and stuff. So he's got to be like a local hero around there, if not, you know, anything else. So all the cops need to know who he is already. So it's just, it's interesting, but you know, for the sake of enjoying the film, you got to suspend your disbelief and just be like, oh, the cops are dumb. You know what I
mean? 100%. Every single person in Charleston would know who this guy is. My God, I'm on Vancouver Island. I'm in Comox, and Aiden Hill, who's a goalie for the Golden Knights, he's from Comox. I swear to God, you talk to any person in this town, they all claim to know him.
Yeah.
There's no way that everyone in Charleston wouldn't know who this guy was. Especially he was drafted by the Bruins, the hometown team. Everyone would recognize him. Oh God. Okay. So the next scene that I is Affleck and Renner, their conversation in the apartment, where Renner tells him, you know, what's the next thing? Affleck says, you know, I don't want to do the next thing. I'm not ready for it. He goes, I don't like the guards on the next thing. He's got the guy who thinks he's G.I. Joe. He's got the vest on the outside. He tucks his pants into his combat boots, that whole thing. And you kind of think like, man, if Renner had listened to Doug, if Fergie had listened to Doug, they probably would have got away with everything.
Yeah, you know, that's true through the whole thing, because what happens, right? The second they rob that truck, the guy with the combat boots is there holding some guy hostage with a gun and stuff like that, and they got to shoot him. But I think it just plays to Renner's character in the film. Like, Renner has reckless disregard for everything. He knows he's not going back to jail. He's not in this for the money, man. Like, you can tell he's in it for the thrill. He just wants to, like, cause havoc and stuff like that. That's his character throughout the thing. Like Rob, you mentioned my favorite quote in the entire film. I need your help. You can ask me about it later, and we're going to hurt some people. Whose car will be taken? Like, that thing, like, that just, like, encapsulates Renner. He's just a guy that just wants chaos. He just wants to, that's the only thing. It's all for the thrill of it or whatever else he gets out of it. So
yeah, he was just so damn good in this. He's good in everything. The Hurt Locker that we talked about earlier, I'm a big fan of his, and I can't picture anybody else playing his character either. So this movie was just so, I keep thinking about it, and I'm glad I watched it this morning, because there's a lot of things that are sticking out. There was, and you talked about it, Alberto, but I did think that the weird thing was, I went into the laundromat, and the guy working at the cashier, he just goes in, gets coffee, and then he walks over, and he sits down, reads the paper, and she asks him if he's doing laundry, and he doesn't answer. And it was like right then, like I've seen the movie before, but I knew that's the moment where he like really, I think, knew that he liked this woman, like just when she went up to him and started talking. And that was something that I'd catch previous times. It was just that moment, because he kind of like his jaw dropped. He was just hesitant. And I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, I completely agree. They kind of, like Josh had said, they lay these great little breadcrumbs out throughout the entire movie that sort of point to all the different things that end up happening. And I think that's a good of those things for sure.
It's just solidifying Ben's character too, as being like the more endearing one of everything, like the good guy of all the bank robbers. The second she sees the blood in the collar, you see her hands start to shake. He could just look away and be like, well, whatever, you know what I mean? But like, he sympathizes with her. He will help her regardless of, you know, getting close to her and maybe putting himself and all his friends in jeopardy. So
what do you think it is in movies, TV, even in wrestling for that matter, when you kind of have these kind of morally gray characters, and if you kind of maybe sometimes when you see them at the start, you set them up as like an important character, the audience has this like investment in them. They want to see them have that happy ending. Why do you think that is?
I think it's because everybody has faults. You know, it doesn't matter who you are. Nobody's 100% a good person all the time. We've all done things that we regret or find regrettable. So I think when you see these characters that you might believe in, whether it's wrestling or film or anything else, you want them to, you know, succeed and get through all this darkness and like find the light in their life. I think it's just like kind of, you know, it's something that everybody has inside them. And they just like it, for in wrestling, we call it the suspension of disbelief. When you buy a ticket to a wrestling show, you watch a wrestling match, you want to just, even though you know it's predetermined and this isn't, you know, a real fight, you want to just pretend it's a real fight in your mind and forget that you know all that stuff. And, you know, the good people do that, and they can suspend disbelief. And that's what, you know, makes audiences go wild and crazy for matches, much like, you know, last night, Bryan Danielson and Eddie Kingston, like people were wildly invested in that at AEW Revolution. Their belief was suspended, and they wanted to see Eddie Kingston triumph finally and find the light in his life, because he's a perfect kind of to compare to a Ben Affleck in this situation, where, you know, Eddie Kingston's very honest in saying he's not, you know, a good guy, you know, he's done bad things, but he's trying very hard to find the light in his life. And same thing with Ben Affleck, man. I think we're just along for the ride, hoping that he can come through.
Yeah. I think that's perfect. Way you described it there. Somebody I wanted to bring up, a character that we haven't really talked about, was Fergie, who was played by Pete Postlewhite. Sorry. His character, I really liked. They didn't show much, but when they did, he was just, he commanded the screen, which was, I think, very, maybe it's just they looked like they actually had fear, they feared the man. And I think that played along with us, because I think that's why he did so well controlling the screen. What did you think of his character?
Yeah, he commands the screen. You can tell that he's got everybody's attention and fear. You know, that's how he rules and stuff like that. I think he's like the perfect kind of gangster to have in this film, like pulling the strings at every corner. Like the second Ben comes in and you see him be like, I'm done, you know, and he's fine. I'm done. I'm out, you know, whatever. He's just like, no, you're not. I wouldn't, you know, have them without you or you without them. And he's just like, you see Ben kind of get aggro on him, be like, nah, you didn't fucking hear me, old man. I'm fucking done. Like, who do you think you are? All this stuff. Yeah. And like he gestures back, and then all of a sudden it's like, I'm going to clip your nuts like I clipped your daddy's. And he goes into the whole thing about, like, you know, how he killed his mom and his mom was like a suicide junkie and all this stuff. And like, just in that, like, what, four sentences, he just completely owns Ben Affleck, you know, for however long.
I wrote this whole scene down, like line for line, because this is one of my favorite just exchanges in just movies in general, where Affleck comes in, he's like, who do you think you are? The only guy in Charleston with a gun? And he goes, you run numbers and pump dope. You're an old guy with a fucked up face that don't know his glory years are behind him. He's like, I ain't fucking working with you. Got it? He's like, if you have a problem, I live at 551 Bunker Hill Street. Stop by anytime. And then Fergie just is like, noted, okay, thank you for that. And he's like, and then the whole, like, your daddy didn't have the heart to tell his son that he was looking for a suicide doper that was never coming home. And then the great ending of, like, if there's a heaven, Sonny, she ain't in it.
Yeah,
that's just, it's so brutal.
Yeah, no remorse, total gangster, you know, pulling the strings however he wants to. And they, like, in that scene, man, you know that Fergie is like the guy you don't mess with. So
he was so good. And unfortunately, he passed away a year later after this movie came out. So it was a good role, casted perfectly for him, I think. So,
next scene that I wanted to highlight was Doug and Jem having their talk by the cemetery, where Doug tells Jem, you know, he's like, this is it. I'm done with it. I'm walking away. You know, if you're going to shoot me, you're going to have to shoot me in the back. And then Jem goes on his whole thing where he explains, he's like, you know, I killed the guy that was coming to kill you. I did 9 years for you. And he wants, I think Jem has this idea of, like, Doug and Chris and Shine kind of all living together and being a happy family. And Doug has the, he's like, you don't care about Chris and Shine. He's like, all you care about is Coke and Xbox, which was great. And then they get into the fight. And, you know, for a guy who was a hockey player who got kicked off his team for fighting, thought, like, Affleck might have, you know, handled himself a little better in that fight.
I mean, I have a thing about that. I think that Ben knows, because we all have a gem in our life, whether it's a gem that, like, will kill people and rob banks, or there's just a guy that you don't want to mess with. Like, I have friends that are smaller than me, and, like, I'm probably more well versed in combat than they are, that, you know, if it gets to a certain point, I'm just going to bow out, because I know that they won't stop regardless of what it is. You know what I mean? So, like, that's kind of the feeling I got in that situation, where Ben, like, he'll tussle with you, but then he's just like, if this goes too far, this guy's going to kill me. You know what I mean? That's kind of the vibe I got from that. Once he gets hit with the gun, he's just like, all right, I'm out of this. You know, there's a gun involved now.
Yeah.
And then we see John Hamm then go to confront Blake Lively's Chris at the bar. He gives his whole speech about, I know everything about money.
Six inches.
Actually, six, 6.14 inches. Yeah. Oh, my God. And then Chris, she's kind of really flirty with him. You know, you got to chase the rabbit if you want the tail, that whole thing. I actually thought Chris and Hamm. Yeah, my mom taught me that. Great mother.
Yeah.
What? 10 years later, after this movie, you think Chris is alive? What would she do in these days?
I think that regardless of whatever, you know, transpired in this film specifically, I think Shine is in, you know, the custody of the state, regardless, hopefully for her sake, because, you know, as much as I love Blake Lively in this movie, because she knocks it out of the park for, you know, the character that she plays, like, I'm feeling for Shine the entire time I'm seeing her talk. You know what I mean?
And in the director's cut too, in the Affleck and Jem, when Jem implies, like, you know, you're the father, and Affleck's like, no, they'd have to check every clinic in the state to figure out who her father is. So, yeah. And then I think that's kind of what was like one of the things that put Jem over the top and made him so angry in that fight. But they cut that line out of the movie, like, very harsh.
Yeah. I mean, if that was my sister, it pushed me over the edge too, regardless if it's true or not. So
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we go to the Fenway heist, which always kind of wondered. They'd already been brought in for the interrogation. They know that the FBI is surveilling them. Where's the kind of logic in going through with it? And also, why are they? I know Chris is part of the crew, but why are they kind of getting all this information, like vital information about the heist? And they still go through with it. She visits Affleck at the hotel across the street from Fenway, and she mentions, he's like, "Oh, you never gave me a necklace," and the only person who would have known that would have been Ham's character. So he knows that he's been talking to this guy, and they still go through with it. There's some really on their part, for me anyway.
Well, there's a little like uncertainty there. Like, it could have been Ham or it could have been Claire. So like, Chris could have bumped into Claire, which also probably would have sent Ben off the edge more than even Ham being involved. Right. So like, that's always something that's stuck in my mind. It's like, I don't know about this, but then like, I try to explain it out of my own consciousness by like saying that. But yeah, as far as, you know, Chris knowing everything, maybe just Jem has a big mouth. She also does work for Fergie as well. So who knows, man? But I think that scene is pretty crucial to like, well, it is obviously crucial to get Ham involved in the Fenway heist and all that other stuff later on for when they finish it. But, you know, from like him being like, not happening, and he picks up Shine and puts her in the hallway on the ground and then comes back in the room and leaves the kid out there. You're like, all right, maybe Ben is not such a great guy, because like, I wouldn't be putting an infant in the hallway of a hotel, regardless of how nice it is. You know what I mean? But, yeah.
Rob, I don't know. How do you feel about the whole, the Fenway heist, their decision to go through with it, and then how the heist went down too, with them kind of going in, you know, getting the money. The Lindas want you to open this door, which I thought was a great line. And then the whole, you know, the shootout in the street, and the pretty much the heat ending redone for.
Yeah, I would. I think it this morning, it made me realize that I really never want to see a nun in a mask, because they pulled that off. I think it was good. Just the whole scene. Those are always my favorite. Like, I mean, you mentioned it. Heat. Just that just scene. Like when the scene in like Heat, in this, just when it all just comes to a head. It was just good. It was done. You didn't know what was going to happen. You're on the edge of your seat, because we're deep down, we're rooting for Doug. We want him to live at least. So you just, well, some of us maybe do. I did, but the way they did the story, that's the way I looked at it. And I just enjoyed the whole thing. And maybe part of me is just, I'm a huge baseball fan too. So I think maybe with it just being Fenway, that might have played a big part, because I don't like the Red Sox. So maybe I was just, I think that played a big part.
What's more Boston? Like they tore down the bar. It's like TD Arena, so that doesn't hold like the same allure, right? But the second there was like robbing the Cathedral of Boston, you know what I mean, in that meeting prior to this happening, it's just like, oh damn, man, it couldn't get more Boston. And then like the whole heist scene, like the way it's just like a pressure cooker when you're watching scenes like this, the way the score is, the way it's shot, like it's building anticipation, it's building anxiety in you as a viewer watching it. And you're feeling that anxiety there at times, like, oh my God, what's happening? And then they finally get to the ambulance at the end with all the money, and they're starting to change their gear to look like ambulance drivers and stuff like that. You're like, damn, they got through this. And all of a sudden it's real quiet, and Doug's the only one that notices it. You know what I mean? And then you're like, oh damn. And the second he looks out that garage window and like sees just an array of cops all the way down the street, you're like, oh, what's going to happen next, man?
Yeah. And then, yeah, the plan for them to get out of Fenway, which is really great too. The one guy sacrificing himself, he has the guy, he's like, you know, I can take a pinch. He goes out and he gets shot like a bunch of times, gives them the opportunity to get away in the cop uniforms, and immediately makes Renner, and they have the great shootout in the street, Renner's like, all right, I surrender. And then gets the face, which actually the effects on that look incredible. Swelling. I don't know how they did that.
The instant swelling and the bullet hole through the cheek. Like, I've never seen in film, like, a scene like that where you're just like, that's very realistic. Like, anything. Like, I'm not a guy that, like, goes online and watches those crazy videos of people actually getting shot from, like, war or anything like that. Like, but, like, that's exactly what I would imagine it is like. Like, the swelling that happens, it's like, oh, my God, that's a detail that nobody's ever put in before and stuff like that. But, like, the whole scene where they're one or Doug is kind of off to the side, kind of just viewing it the entire time, you're like, yeah, it's a total like kind of heat scene at the end, but kind of flipped on its ass. This is Doug would be involved with John Hamm, but now it's just Jem and Hamm.
Yeah.
But we can talk about the director's cut as well, if you guys want to, like the original ending of the film too. But
yeah. With well, for those who don't know, in the director's cut, there's an alternate ending where Ben Affleck's character does go to visit Claire. He gets shot and actually died. So I don't know. Yeah. I'll let you kind of take it away. Are you happy with the happy ending with him ending up in Tangerine where he always thought his mop, or do you think the director's cut ending with dying was more impactful? I don't know which one worked better for you, do you think?
Doug dying would not have been a good finish for me. I spent all this time throughout the film being invested in Doug. I could care less if Jem dies, you know what I mean? Chris dies, all these other people, because they're not characters that I'm invested in. I've been investing in Doug this entire film. I don't care if Doug gets together with Claire. Like that's part of this film that I think some people might invest in. Like, hopefully it's a very happy ending where they both end up in Tangerine, Florida, holding hands, like going on boat rides or whatever they do. But like, for me, just Doug, you know, seeing that happen, his whole world kind of is gone. Like the brother he's had that he's had to live with, that's kind of for better or for worse, there for him at every turn. He sees him get shot. You know, I think that's a weight lifted off Doug's shoulders. Doug goes to the florist and clips his nuts, which is my second favorite quote in the entire film, you know what I mean? And it's just like, boom, weights off his shoulders. And the one like little breadcrumb throughout the film is when he's at Claire's house earlier in the film, he asks her to close the drapes before they like hook up for the first time, because he's like, ah, my uncle, you know, he could see
the bus driver.
He lives right over there. And then he's in his uncle's house and you see his uncle's picture and like his bus driving credentials there. You can obviously see that like this is part of Doug's plan, getaway plan the entire time, right? But it's that close to Claire's house. So when he makes the phone call, I think it just all makes that much more sense that he's viewing her through the window with John Hamm, you know, behind her and stuff like that, having this conversation. It just makes that much more sense from that breadcrumb sprinkled in, you know, an hour earlier in the film.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
and the post-it note that he leaves on John Hamm's cruiser on the I couldn't think of a better ending, man.
Yeah, no, it's terrific. Rob, I don't know if do you have anything you want to? I think Josh kind of said it perfectly.
Yeah, no, you did. Is basically just something that we always ask now: is there anything that you watched recently that you really enjoyed, or anything that you would recommend for people to check out, whether it's a TV show or a newer movie that you watched, or any movie really?
It's tough because I watched so much. I mean, obviously, I saw Dune 2 on the weekend.
Oh, cool!
Me too.
Amazing. And like, I brought my wife, and she's usually not into like sci-fi actiony stuff. She's like, that's the stuff that I can watch alone, you know what I mean? But like, she came along for this one, and she doesn't like long movies either, so I was just like, oh man, we're in for it. And the second the movie ended, she turns to me, she goes, that was amazing, you know what I mean? Like, and like, that's something that catches me off guard, that like, she enjoyed it as well. As far as like stuff that falls into like this, I watched Wrath of Man. I never had seen it. It's another kind of heist film with
Jason Statham,
and it's by Guy Ritchie. Yeah. And I was just cruising through Netflix and I saw it. I was like, how did this slip by me? And I checked that out. And that's amazing too.
Yeah, that one is really good. I enjoyed that one. That was very cool.
Yeah, I think that was pretty much all for the movie. I made so many notes and I was like trying to run through them all. I think the only thing that I kind of didn't bring up was the movie was almost directed by Adrian Lin, who did
was 9 and a half weeks or something. Choice.
Yeah, 8.5 weeks, Fatal Attraction, stuff like that. It was like sex thriller kind of stuff, which I don't think would have worked all that well. Ben Affleck took the cast around during the filming of the movie and kind of wanted them to sort of get to know the town, the locals. And he was touring Blake Lively around, and he's like, oh, that's where Matt grew up, Matt Damon. She's like, oh, she's like, that's interesting. She's like, you know Jason Bourne? And he's like, this is crazy. He's like, this is like the first generation of people who didn't know we were friends or weren't like inundated by the Matt and Ben sort of kind of like the whole sort of media hoopla that was around them being friends. Like she had no clue, which I thought was interesting.
I had heard that before, and it's just mind blowing that you're involved in acting and like film and Hollywood and stuff like that. And you have no idea that Matt and Ben, you know, they won an Oscar for their first like film they ever wrote, Good Will Hunting, and they acted in it as well. Like their story is very similar to like Sylvester Stallone's Rocky story, where like they just they kept pushing and pushing and be like, we involved in this and stuff like that, and then they make it and it's just, it's an iconic film, stuff like that. And like for Blake Lively to know that, I don't think it's an endearing quality for her to have to like, but it's also one of those things. Like I know so many wrestlers now, I've been in wrestling for 20 years, that like I'm not going to say their name because it's probably something that might get them heat with other people, but somebody that like I work with at TNA, like we're talking and I'm just like, yeah, man, like Brett versus Austin is probably my favorite match. This Brett match is like, I just think Brett is amazing. He's like, you know, I've never seen a Bret Hart match. And I was just like, I just throw my hands up. Like, I don't know what to say. I don't know how you're involved in this business. You know what I mean? But like,
Chris Bay tweeted that not too long ago that he's never watched Bret Hart.
So he did come out with it. Okay.
Oh, okay.
He came out. He told me that like 4 years ago, dude. And I was sitting in a chair, I would have fallen out of it.
He tweeted that not too long ago, and it was one of those tweets that a lot of people had a lot to say.
I will give him the credit where credit's due. He did come to me like a year ago and be like, I watched a bunch of Bret Hart matches and he is amazing and all this stuff. I'm just like, yeah, man, there you go. You did your homework. Thank you.
Have you watched Matt and Ben's movie Air?
Yeah, I did. You know, super interesting. I'm a huge basketball fan. Like outside of wrestling films, it's just basketball for me. That's like the sport that I've been in love with since I was 10 years old and Vince Carter got drafted to the Raptors and changed my whole perception of what basketball was. So, you know, to see the whole story of Michael Jordan signing a shoe deal, doing all that stuff, it was a really cool film. And obviously Matt and Ben are two of my favorite actors ever since Good Will Hunting when I was like, you know, a young teenager. So
you guys got Vince Carter and franchise stuck around Vancouver. We got
Big
Country, Sharif Abdul-Rahim, and now we're in Memphis.
Could have had Steve Francis too, but you know.
Why not just draft him? Who cares if he refuses to come? Then you could at least trade him for something, right?
Yeah, and I saw an interesting documentary about the Grizzlies.
Yeah, you know, the one on Crave?
Yes, yeah, I watched that like a few months ago and I was just like, damn, man, yeah. Like, and like as somebody who is Canadian, has traveled to Vancouver many times, I think an NBA franchise in Vancouver works just as well as one in Seattle, you know, with all the history and stuff like that. I think Canada needs a second team and Vancouver would be the perfect place to put one. I had no idea why I'd ever left. It just makes no sense.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on the island, but I remember as a kid going over once in a while to see the Grizzlies and it was like the greatest thing ever. It made me fall in love with basketball. So like you said, I hope they do come back and hopefully we see you back here on the West Coast soon too. I saw you a couple years ago, with New. And some couple great matches there. So as we wrap up, for myself, thank you so much for joining us. We really, really do appreciate it. And this was absolutely incredible conversation.
Yeah, man. Dude, films, it's wrestling, films, and basketball for me. So if I can talk about any of those things, it's good for me, man. Especially when I get to pick some of my favorite movies, it's easy.
Very cool. Well, if you would like, go ahead and tell anybody where they can follow you on social media or anything you got coming up that you want to talk about.
Well, you know, Instagram and Twitter, it's @walking_weapon, Canadian wrestler for the past, you know, nearly 20 years, I wrestle in TNA. Watch it every Thursday night on Access or if you're in Canada on Fight or Game TV at 8 p.m. And yeah, we got Sacrifice coming up, Rebellion at the Palms in April, and just a lot of big stuff coming.
Very cool. Well, guys, want to say thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you again next week. You can follow me on Twitter or X @RobWilkins. Gisberto, he doesn't give you the choice to follow him.
Yeah, you know my deal. I have social media. I don't use it. You can find me here.
I respect that.
Guys, thank you for watching. Thank you for being part of Fightful.com. We will see you later. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you later. Peace.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.